welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
Hello and welcome to episode 64 of the Carpcast, sponsored by, in association by, Clearwater Fisheries, which is a fantastic fishery in the northwest of England, somewhere I'm going to be doing some coaching. If you fancy a few tips and stuff and fishing with me for 24 or 48 hours, then you can do that, and we are doing it at Clearwater Fisheries. Give me a message if you're interested. Starting off with an advert, sorry about that, Mark. How are you?
I'm not, just chilling out. Been at work this morning, just sat in the spare room, headphones on, socks off, and my feet still. What more can I say?
How's the shop going this time of year now? Have you noticed a drop off in footfall?
November dropped a bit, with the weather. Obviously, fishing is very seasonal, but we've had a good start to December, to be honest. We've also had a bit of a facelift on the shop. I mentioned a fella called Dusto, the graffiti artist.
Yeah.
We've now got a great big spray-painted carp on the front of the shop.
I did see the pictures.
It looks a hell of a lot better.
I saw the pictures posted on the net. Yeah, it looks pretty. Are they doing all the shops like that?
I believe they are, yeah. They've done Manchester. Sheffield have got a big menacing-looking perch on theirs. We've got a nice carp. I wanted him to do the fat lady. See, we've mentioned it already. But I wanted him to do the fat lady up there, but no, he had to. He did what he was going to do. And I think the Sunderland shop's next. And being up there, I don't know, I think they're having a cod or something, or a bass.
Right.
But yeah, he's you can't fail to be impressed by his work. And he's got a Facebook page, just Dusto. Check him out.
Yeah, what have they done then? Just commissioned him to do all the shops?
Yeah, all the fishing republics, they're just a lot more eye-catching now. I mean, we're opposite a gym. We've had a couple of people come in since, so, wow, how long's this tackle shop been here? I've been going to this gym for, however long, and it's like, the shop's been here 8 years. But they only just noticed it because we've now got a great big fish and massive white letters, Fishing Republic, so...
It just goes...
It's impressive work.
It just goes to show how advertising and marketing works. I mean, I had a bar in Blackpool for four years. We put famous DJs on in there, really famous sort of house DJs and stuff. And every single week, 4 years down the line, people would wander in and go, oh, I didn't know this was here. It's like, I've spent fortunes advertising, I've battered Facebook for years, and it's in a prime location right opposite the biggest nightclub in Blackpool, and there's people walked in every single week are like, oh, didn't know this was here. And this is why advertising works, and you have to keep doing it. You might think people know about your stuff, but you have to keep doing it. And if you have a fishing product to advertise, what better place to advertise it than the biggest medium in carp fishing currently, with 50,000 plus downloads a month? And that'd be us, Mark. That'd be the Carpcast.
We are the number one podcast still.
We actually made, we're having a bit of a drive, Heapy Bob, who runs the official Carpcast fan page and supporter and helper of the Carpcast, he was trying to get us a Christmas number one. And the way the iTunes charts work, it's based on ratings. So if people are rating your podcast, you shoot up the charts. And in one day of him making a post, we shot up to number 6 in the games and hobbies section. I screenshotted it. It's my claim to fame. The following day, we were at number 52. So it just goes to show when people are making... if people make reviews regular, then you shoot right up those charts. Gardeners, as somebody put on the post, Gardeners Question Time must be the tits, I think was the quote, because they're always either number 1 or number 2 every single week. So If you want to help us out, if you'd like to help the Carbcast gain some sort of status in the iTunes world, then it would help us greatly if you went over to iTunes and posted a review and click the star rating or whatever it is. And it doesn't really matter if it's good or bad. You can put anything, just a review will shoot us up the charts. And wouldn't it have been nice to have had a Christmas number one?
Yeah, I'm going to do another rating now. I think most of the ratings are mine, to be fair. Does that count still?
It doesn't let you do them, does it? Unless you registered multiple accounts.
Yeah, I might have done that as well. But yeah, we're going to beat those Gardeners Will, those Radio 4 bastards. How dare they beat us?
Well, no, already you've just made it so that I have to... give yourself the
E
explicit rating. Yeah, I think I'm just going
to
do it permanently. I think I'm just going to change our.
Yeah, but that makes people more interested.
You think? You know,
if you'll see, when I'm looking at films to watch, if it's a PG or a 12, I'm not interested. There's going to be no tits, no gore. I want an 18.
I'm exactly the same. If I look at it, no matter how good it is, if I look at a film, it does say 18 next to it. It puts you off straight away, doesn't it? Somebody's got to really recommend it.
You know, it's going to be sanitised. Yeah. Have you watched, Hunger Games?
Yes.
That's it. Yeah, I watched it. Yeah, and it's good. But it could be so much better if it was an 18 and they actually, you know, proper went to town on it. Are we going to get back to fishing? Otherwise, I'm just going to...
fishing. We're talking about advertising. Yeah, the biggest medium in angling, Clearwater Fisheries. They do support us now. Alex over there has purchased the old Borwick's complex up in Carnforth in Lancaster, and he's got a, I hope you won't mind me saying, he's got a few quid. And if you had a few quid and bought a complex of carp lakes, what would you do with it, Mark?
I'd close it down and have it to myself, if I'm totally honest.
Yeah, that number one. Well, we really hope that Alex doesn't do that. Yeah. Number two, you would probably turn it into the finest fishery in the Northwest, if not the country, I think is what I would do if I had that sort of money available to me. And guess what? He has, and he is. The work has started. I've been following the Facebook page. You can have a look at Clearwater Fisheries on Facebook. They did a load of netting. I think there's 8 lakes down on the complex. Some of them are getting knocked into each other. He's landscaping them, sculpting them. I mean, he inherited fish to over 40 pounds in there, which is pretty damn good for the Northwest anyway. You know, there's literally a handful of 40 pluses in the Northwest, and he's got one of them and a load of 30s in there as well. He's stripping the smaller fish out. He's spent a fortune on fish stockings, hand-picked loads of fish, the first of which went in this week, I believe. There's a few videos up there. I've seen a load of 20s going. All really pretty fish, all from UK suppliers. I know he's picked a few from all the top suppliers in the country. He's got some extremely knowledgeable people that are advising him on all this. He's been building pegs, they've done nettings to strip the smaller fish out, and it's basically all going on. His dream is to make this one of the best fisheries in the Northwest, if not the country, and he's certainly going to do that. I'm going to be doing some coaching down there as well. I'm going to get to know the lakes really well, and it's certainly what, you know, it's the sort of place you will not be able to get a ticket on in the future, I think, because as we know, lakes that are really good become very popular and sold out. At the minute, you can buy a season ticket. I think it's 400 quid for a year, runs November to November. Day tickets are still available on there for the time being. I think he probably is going to stop them at some point. But yeah, check out the Clearwater Fisheries Facebook. I'll put a link for the website and stuff underneath. And a big thanks to Alex for supporting us, and we'll be giving you an update on all the work that's going down there pretty regularly, every single week, because the pegs are going to look amazing. He's got this thing where he doesn't want you to be able to see the next swim from your swim, so, you know, planting lots of stuff in between you and the next swim, loads of reeds and stuff, and just making it pretty carpy. Do you like that? There's nothing worse, is there, Martin, fishing in a goldfish bowl where everyone can see everybody?
Yeah, I'm totally with that. I mean, remember, I'm sure it's different now. It was a few years back. It was fairly new. It was Brazos on the Linear Complex.
Yes.
And I was down there for one of the Nash Road shows a good few years back. And, yeah, I mean, we could have fished at the night, but I just didn't. I just kept in the bivvy. I had a bit of a crack with Lee Birch, Mick Henderson, and a couple of other people. But it was just like swim bivvy, swim bivvy, swim bivvy all the way along. I thought, wow, this is not really what I want for carp fishing. Although he does a lot of fish, he makes a lot of people happy. I'm not knocking it, but like you've just said, I like to see vegetation. I like to think I'm the only one there, a bit of sanctuary.
Yeah, so,
yeah, sounds like they're doing it right up at Clearwater.
They're doing it right. I forgot to mention there's an excellent cafe up there as well. Superb food. I'm hoping he puts in some sort of function room up there. I know there's a, like with Raisby and stuff, there's a bit of a craze of lakes. Not a craze, but having events. I mean, a market for a decent function room on the side of a lake, you can get weddings and all sorts in there, can't you, if there's a really nice scenic shot, and which would be perfect for us doing some events up there, should Alex do that. I know we're looking at that for next year. There's a very good chance we'll have a Carpcast social on there, an extremely high chance of that next year. In fact, I would say almost 100%. Maybe looking at doing an even bigger event up there. He's got loads of room. As I said, I don't want to let too much out of the bag, but Alex has got some great plans for the area. I might even have a music festival or something there at some point. It's going to be good. But yeah, it's certainly worth checking the cafe out. If nothing else, the food's amazing. And you'll probably see me down there quite a bit. Hope to get down there next year. Like I say, doing some coaching tuitions and stuff. And just enjoying a nice fishery in the northwest. It's needed, I think. So moving on. There has been something on the net this week, Mark, that seems to have been with us for quite some time now. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's...
It's on the net. It must be true.
I do. We're revisiting Big Rig. It just seems like a bad penny. It won't go away. Every now and then it just keeps popping up. So, it's been refused to be ratified as a British record by the British Record Fish Committee.
Yes, so... I've been speaking to Tom, who caught it. He still hasn't told me if it's Doherty or Doherty. Please tell me, Tom, this time. So basically Big Rig, the fish that was caught from Rob Hale's fishery, it's been submitted to the British Record Fish Committee. I know Rob Hales wanted it submitting, and he couldn't do it himself. It was recorded. The official record has been denied by the British Record Fish Committee. Now, we had some interesting legal view on that from Rob Hughes in Hughes News last week, and he believes it should have been, and believes in the letter of the law it should have been. The Record Fish Committee has met, sat down, and I think their quote is, the committee decided that fish had been grown under an artificial feeding regime close to a weight close to or exceeding the existing species record. It's subsequently been caught bigger, 71.4, and that weight will not be recorded either. Rob Hales has quoted saying it's a very uneducated decision. He's naturally upset. Upset might be a bit strong, but he doesn't agree with the ruling. He says it's predictable. I'm not at all surprised. I think the British Record Fish Committee don't fully understand the carp fishery growing business. It's an uneducated decision. All big carp in this country and elsewhere only get to those weights because they eat high protein boilies. Totally see his point there. I mean, pretty much all fish suppliers do feed their fish in stock ponds to a certain size and then sell them, don't they? So the argument here is, what size is that acceptable? Because somebody grew them a bit longer. I mean, the fish has doubled in weight since it was sold from the fish farmer, the original fish farmer. Do we want to go down this road and debate it again? I don't know. One interesting thing is here, Tom's told me that he's been told that it will never be, this particular fish will never be accepted as a record, even if it makes £80, £90, £100 in 10 years' time, it still won't ever be considered to be the record. In this quote in the Angling Times, it says that British Record Fish Committee Chairman Mike Halen told Angling Times that the fish may still be able to break the record in the future. So Tom's been told it won't be ever be considered. There's a quote here from Mike Halen saying that it might be able to break the record in the future. I mean, I can't make head nor tail of that. He says, I don't think it's ruled out forever. If it came out at £85, put on significant weight in the fishery itself, assuming the fishery isn't being regularly fed huge amounts of baits, I don't see why necessarily excluding it forever. What fishery fished by carp anglers that's busy with big fish isn't regularly fed by huge amounts of bait? I mean, that's every fishery in the country, right?
It is, but it's different in the fact that big rig has not been fished for until recently. Now, that's one thing I had a chat with Dave Moore about when I was on his lake, you know, the effect that being fished for has on fish, and he's seen it firsthand, and it really does just stop them in the tracks growth-wise a lot of the times. You get the odd three that just pushes through and pushes through, but it really does stop them. And if I'll just take a fish, I don't know, Mary, you know, it reached a record where I think 56 pound plus was its top weight. Imagine if that had just lived, you know, in a stock pond, happily, never fished for, could feed without concern every minute of its life if it wanted. That would have probably reached £70.
This is the thing, isn't it? Without doubt, you're right. The fish that are not being fished for, they're eating when they want to eat. They're not scared of being caught, are they? So there's no danger there. Now, all fish to a certain size are grown like that, you know, depending on if you buy them as C4 fish, C5 fish. I've spoke to a lot of fish breeders over the last 10 years, and every single one of them wishes they could grow them bigger, because every single person wants to buy the biggest fish possible, but they can't get them that big because people have bought them already. You know, there's only a finite amount of fish you can physically breed, depending on the space you've got, the stock ponds, just the room, and none of them get a chance to grow them that big. You know, I spoke to Simon down at Dinton about that. He'd love to grow fish to £50, but he can't, because they all get sold every year, and the only ones that do ever get grown bigger, I remember speaking to Andy Parker of Handy Carp, he's the guy that grows the really pretty linears and the fully scaled and stuff. He said the only ones that, he said the odd one gets missed during the nettings and stuff, and generally the ones that nobody wants, the tatty ones, are the ones that, you know, get grown bigger because they haven't been sold at whatever, you know, the C3s or the C4s, whatever sizes they sell them. But everybody wants the bigger fish. I don't care how elitist you are. Every single fishery manager I've spoke to has said exactly the same thing. You know, he'd sell the biggest fish he possibly could. But they get bought early. So, there's two things here. There's heritage and sort of credibility and of captures. And there's also, you know, from a fishery owner, somebody like Rob Hales, he just wants to grow the biggest fish he possibly can. I know Kevin Nash was exactly the same. He, for the first few years of the Church and the Cops, he grew those fish without fishing for them. It's common sense that they're going to grow bigger without being scared of danger. I mean, that's absolute common sense. So my opinion, I've given this lots of times, is should this fish be recorded? Yes, it should. Should it be the record? Probably not. It's a record is, for me, is something to aspire to. You know, it's something. This is where I get a bit confused. We were just chatting about this on the phone earlier, weren't we, Mark? But basically, like, can I ever aspire to catch the biggest, the British carp record? Well, unless we find an unknown 70 pounder swimming about, and we know that fish cannot get that big without boilies, it's impossible. You know, on one of the very early carp casts, you remember speaking to Ronnie DeGroote about this and saying, you know, how big can a fish grow naturally? You're ever going to find a 100 pounder in any country in the world that's grown to that size naturally? And no, you're probably never going to. Because, you know, you can see with the Euro aquafish how big they've gone in, because they're fed every single day, you know, like ridiculous amounts of bait. Those same fish have never got anywhere near that size in the lake they originated from, Balaton next door. You know, they might go to 70s, possibly might touch 80, but they've grown 20 pound bigger by being fed angler's bait, you know, in a smaller lake next door. They just can't get that big without angler's bait. So if you take a lake like, I don't know, take any Essex Manor, for instance, it's always been a heavy bait water. That's got a ridiculous amount of big fish in about 6.5 acres, 7 acres, however big it is. You know, at one point it had 350s, one close to 60, dozens of 40s, and untold 30s. That lake has always been fed heavily for the last 15 years. When I first became aware of that lake, you know, I remember Dave Levy telling me how much bait used to go in there a week, and it's hundreds and hundreds of kilos, way more than, you know, what's probably being fed in you know, one of Rob Hales's stock ponds. That's why those fish are that big. So if one of them broke the record, should that be counted? Well, they're being fished for, so that's the difference, isn't it? Is are they being fed without being fished for, and are they being fed with being fished for? I actually agree with the British Record Fish Committee's ruling here that if it's grown in an environment, in a stock pond environment where it's not being fished for, then even though it has grown in the UK war, it's an artificial circumstance, isn't it? But where's the line? I mean, you know, is the Essex Manor an artificial circumstance because it's had hundreds and hundreds of kilos of bait put in a month or a week? Again, I keep coming to the conclusion of it should be recorded how big fish in the UK can grow under different conditions, whether it's farmed or whether it's natural. It should be recorded. But should we actually have a record? I don't think there should be one, because the lines are too blurred. What weight can a fish come from abroad and be stocked? And then how long does it have to live its natural life in a water that's being fished? There's just too many variables, isn't there, I think. I don't know. Have you come to any conclusion?
Not really. Pretty much the same, though. It's something that doesn't affect me personally, so I just kind of like sit back and let it all pass me by, to be fair. Although, I've seen some of these comments from Rob Hales, and obviously he cannot be surprised at this ruling, so I can't understand how he's, you know, saying it is an uneducated decision. You know, he's totally moved the goalposts, and, you know, if you did that in, I don't know, golf, and took a shovel and made the hole a bit bigger, they won't give you any records of the ball in that, would they?
No. I mean, this Mike Halen, who seems to, the Angling Times seems to have got some quotes off, he confirms that the cart record still exists and would never be split into cultivated and uncultivated lists, like, you know. So they have terms of reference, according to him. I don't know, just get rid of it. I mean, at the end of the day, who is ever going to get a chance to fish for a record carp? Because once you know, let's look at the parrot in Wasin. There's a wait, it's probably dead man's shoes on there. There's a waiting list of about 25 years. There's just no chance of me being able to fish for that fish for a record carp. I mean, what other species could you legitimately attempt to catch a record, do you think?
Barbel, bream, tench, perch. I know venues that have got the potential for that off the top of my head that I can gain access to easily.
The record bream and tench, they've got that big because of carp boilies. Most of the record bream and tench now come from well-known carp lakes, don't they?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, the record bream comes from Ferry Lagoon, which, yes, it is carp fish, but it's a 150-acre pit, and I doubt very much there is enough boilies going to make that much of a difference.
Is that the record now?
The Scout.
I thought there'd been like a 24-pounder from a carp lake. I'm going to find out now.
That's somebody. I'm sure someone will update it. But when I fished the Scout Lake over the other side of the river, you know, I was pretty much, you know, four times out of five, I was the only angler, not the only carper, the only angler. And, you know, the small number in bream in there were huge, great things. I never latched onto one myself, which you might surprise some of you. But while I was there, there was a bream angler, did a three-night session, and he had, a big hit for that place. He had three bream that were 15, 16, and 18 pound. And that is a venue that does not see hardly any bait because it's just so low stock, so hard, it hardly gets fished.
Mm.
And yet the fish in there were, you know, a big percentage of the record size.
Yeah, I take it back. You're right. The record bream, 2211 in 2012 from Ferry Lagoon, and it still is, yeah. And there's no way that's any sort of artificial. I mean, it sees a lot of carp baits, well carp fished, but not, you know, like you say, it's a huge eight. There's a lake. There's a load of out of bounds on that lake as well that you can't fish. So it's definitely not
a hell of a lot now.
No, it's definitely not an unnatural thing. I mean, the barbel, you know, the barbel, there's huge barbel in, you know, most of them seem to come from the great ooze, don't they, the big ones. Record's currently 21 pound. Graham King from the great ooze, so yeah, I mean that's I don't know about the stretch, I don't know if it's very private, but you know, a river's a river, depending on locks and, you know, and weirs and stuff, it may be possible to get access to that fish and other 20 pound fish. So yeah, I mean, that, see, for me, like a record, it has to be something to aspire to. It has to be something that's actually possible to break it, you know. That's where that magic comes from, of, you know, when you're a kid and you look at these sort of records and it's like, wow, you know, the carp one, it's so far removed from normal fishing. But other species, I mean, you know, perch, there's big perch everywhere. There's definitely big perch that we don't know about, isn't there, in certain lakes, especially some of the big trout reservoirs and stuff.
Well, without a doubt, I dare say, you know, even other species, again, the bream, tench, maybe even carp in some of the, when we spoke about Rutland before,
yeah,
that is perfect habitat for carp to grow enormous. So who knows what's in there? And everyone wants to guess it and let us know, please do.
I know, I always wanted to catch I always wanted to catch a big crucian. Yeah, they were always a nice fish.
Trusty.
Yeah, current record's £4.10.
Was that Martin Bowler?
No, Michael James from Johnson's Lake in Surrey.
So, what's the tench record at the minute while you've got them up?
Why have I not seen tench yet? Perch, wow, that's bigger than I thought.
Is it about £5.14 or something like
but
that?
But this goes to show what we're saying, actually. No, it's £6.03, and there's been two separate ones, one in 2011, one in 2012, both from different places. I mean, that tells you that, you know, it's beatable. It's not the same fish repeatedly being caught. I mean, you know, look, now big rig's out of the question. I mean, the parrots, how many times is the parrot going to break the record in the next 5 years? Probably a number of times.
I don't know. It's I'm reliably informed its last capture was 64.
Yeah,
so unless we have another super mild winter, then
we've not had a great winter.
I'm sure Terrain will catch it when it does. But
yeah. The next year we get a really mild winter and a really warm autumn. It's going to be huge again. You know, it's obviously with the conditions haven't been great this year. We had a really cold spring, a really hot summer, and then we bypassed autumn and went to minus fives. You know, it's
Roach, tell me about it. I was out in it.
Yeah, tench £15.03 from Sheepwalk. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
well known carp lake.
Terrain had a big long scaly mirror.
Yes, I remember it well. Is it Martin Clark's book? Did Martin Clark fish Sheepwalk?
I don't know. I have to confess, I've not read his book.
I've read his book. I haven't read that many books. And I remember Sheepwalk. So maybe I actually sent Martin a message earlier wishing him well and stuff. I believe he's recovering from his heart attack. He's not strong yet. I thought maybe it's a good time to get him on the show while he's laid up and maybe got some time to kill and stuff. So I've messaged him. He's already said that he's going to come on the show. So hopefully we'll have him on soon. Spoke to Johnny Mack earlier. Johnny Mack's going to be on this show. Just while we tie up this record thing, because I think this may be the last time we discuss this, it's hopefully done and dusted now, and nobody would be more happy with it being done and dusted than Tom, who caught the fish. He seems to be taking things in slightly better spirits now. He's kind of had the worst of it. Once again, there's been a lot of posts, negative posts on Facebook this week going through this capture. You know, I've seen some pretty pretty near the mark stuff said by some very ignorant and downright toxic shitters of human beings, especially on Rob Malin's inflammatory, is that the word I'm looking for? Certainly contentious post. Now, obviously, Rob Malin's pushed the Keep It Real, and you know he's got a very small niche market in the magazine world, and then it does seem to be the hardcore anglers. So it's no surprise he's coming from that angle. He's probably had the most interaction on any post he's ever made on this particular one. But again, it brings out the uneducated idiots, unfortunately. And I've seen some horrible stuff said. You know, at the end of the day, it's a fish. But Tom, I've had a few messages back and forwards with Tom, and Tom sent me a quote that he wants reading out, which we will gladly do. You know, Tom seems like a really nice lad, and doesn't deserve some of the hate that he's had. And at the end of the day, he went fishing. That fish was, you know, put in the lake that he joined. After he joined, you know, he didn't join to catch a 70 pound fish. He's a lad that went fishing, and it just happened to be him who's hook bait it picked up. So it's ridiculous, some of the things that I've seen said, but hopefully this will be the end of it. And Tom says, the most controversial aspect of my capture of the Avenue fish was whether it qualifies as a British record. People I consider much, much better qualified to judge this were also divided. Prior to my claim, Robbie Harrison caught the same fish at 71.4 and was quoted as saying, I will claim the record if Rob wants me to, which I believe he would have if I didn't. I believe the British Record Fish Committee panel are the most qualified people to judge the validity of the claim, and I'm happy that it's been settled once and for all. So he's basically saying they made a decision, he's happy with it, that's dealt. And you know, we can put this to bed now. So that's the end of it. You know, they have made their decision. There ain't going to be any appeals from Tom or anything by the look of it, and done and dusted. And if you're one of these people saying really horrible things, you need to get out more. You know, you need a cuddle. I'll give you a cuddle, I don't mind, I'll make you feel better. But you know, the world's a wonderful place, and big fish getting caught, and you know, hating on people for it. I mean, for what? You know, if we're looking at morality, I mean, really, you know, the parrot that comes out 14, 15 times a year in a very exclusive lake that you and me are never going to be able to fish, is that something to aspire to as well? I don't think so. You know, the fish is a mug. Sorry to all those people who've caught it, you might feel offended. I would love to catch a mug. The muggy ones are the best ones.
without a doubt. I mean,
still, I mean, I would enjoy the catch. I would enjoy it a lot. But you know, the fish that comes out at least once a month. I don't know. Let's not go down this road. You know, the lady was a friendly one. It took me 60 nights to catch it. It took Daryl Peck 60 nights to catch it. It took Terry Hearn 60 odd nights to catch it. And it was a friendly one.
I just want to butt in and say, just get it out there that it took me 42.
And see, that makes you a better angler than Terry Hearn, obviously. But that's the argument I've seen some people saying about different things. Fishing's personal. We've said this. You know, would it mean the same to you if you caught it on your first night as if you worked hard for it at 40 nights? But, you know, I don't think it does. I mean,
probably not. No,
still a great capture, but the more effort you put in for something, the more rewarding it is when you catch it. And sometimes it drops really hard. Sometimes it could be the easiest fish to catch, and it takes you 100 nights. Sometimes you might catch it on the first night. The satisfaction element, because at the end of the day, we don't just want to, you know, if we just wanted to see that fish in a photograph, we'd just sling a net in and drag them all out, wouldn't we? We wouldn't put the graft in between. But you know, it's the art of going fishing. It's the art of enjoying the experience, and you know, and setting that camp up and getting the Coleman rocking and having the bacon butties in the morning, all the things that make carp fishing special. You know, the sunsets, the moons, the nights listening to fish boshing out there, all the stuff that invokes the passion inside you. I mean, that's what's fishing about. There, you know, taking a picture of a fish and weighing it at the end of it is why I never even used to take a camera fishing. It was only when I met Roger Bacon and the Manchester lads on Wireside, who couldn't believe that I didn't take a camera, and they've all got SLR, well, pre-digital in those days, but SLRs and really good cameras. I wasn't even bothered. It was just like, oh, has anyone got a camera? No, okay, I'll put it back. You know, for many, many years, that's how I fish. Over half my fishing life, that's how I fish, because I didn't even think about, I wasn't in that environment where you would take a picture of a fish. But, you know, now I do, obviously. In the world of social media and ego massaging, then why not? But all the magical things that we enjoy about fishing, they're all there. We don't want to just haul a big fish out. Maybe some people do. Maybe some people it's all about status or ego, but I don't think that's the majority by any stretch of the imagination. Anyway, I feel like this has been a round and about way of wrapping up this big rig debacle debate. Am I making words up? I'm not sure. Anyway, moving on, what do we have next, Mark?
Well, I was going to suggest you do your ads now, because I'm sitting here cross-legged, holding my bladder in.
Okay. You go and relieve yourself. And I'll tell you about VIP Carp Holidays. Website's vipcarpholidays.com. And we're looking at like family holidays or like complete late bookings. Not your kind of, you know, just go fishing with your mate on a drive and survive. But something that's a little bit more bespoke. And we've got a couple of venues. One is very different from everything. If you've ever fancied, you know, you don't just fancy the commercial lakes for fishing, and maybe you fancy a bit of river fishing, there's no better place to go than the Rivalot, right in the south of France. And there is no better venue than the Rivalot Paradise, which is owned, recently purchased by Jim Lightfoot, who's an extremely experienced European angler, has been fishing abroad for decades. He knows his stuff, and he's been searching for a venue for quite some time, and he's found a fantastic villa with its own private bank, swimming pool, sleeps up to six, maybe even eight people, can handle two or three anglers, plus all the facilities to take your families, partners, other halves, whatever. It's in a non-flood zone of the river lot, so you can book in advance safely without, you know, worrying if the river's going to be up or you know, if it's going to stop you fishing. It never will. It's fantastic for mixed species as well. There's big everything there, pikes and catfish, all sorts of stuff if you're into your predator fishing, as well as the carp. Jim's been out there now, even in winter he's catching, because it's in the south of France, so it never really gets that cold. He also has a cruiser where you can do guided trips. If you've got some boat experience, he'll let you and a mate have the boat, because it just sleeps too. Or if you just fancy going on your own and you want Jim to be your guide, you can go and spend a week's fishing with him. It's an absolute fisherman's paradise. You know, there's facilities in the villas, two shower rooms, bathrooms, one on each level of the villa. One of the living rooms has a double futon sofa bed, so it is actually possible to sleep eight. There's great facilities there. It's like games room. There's bikes included. There's the swimming pool, as I said, and table tennis table. The far bank of the river is completely unspoiled as well, giving you excellent views of all the wildlife and the natural environment. It's just a fantastic holiday. It's all the facilities you would expect. Kitchen, TVD, DVD player, loads of films and stuff. There's canoes provided. You can hire your tackle over there as well if you would like to fly out there. Jim will pick you up from the airport. They can give you transfers. It's the perfect family holiday. And I shall be going myself in the very near future. So we'll do some sort of on the bank or whatever from there. Again, check out vipcarpholidays.com. Somewhere very similar as well, except it's not a river, it's a fantastic lake that comes with a farmhouse that can sleep up to 10 people, is Saint Armand. We advertised Saint Armand all last year. It's a friend of ours, Christoph, that owns it. It's a fantastic 170-year-old farmhouse with all the facilities you would expect. There isn't a swimming pool in this one, but you've got the games room, the table tennis, tons and tons of games in there. And the fishing is amazing. It's a 4.5-acre spring-fed lake, right? In a valley, it's got a flourishing ecosystem and stuffed full of fish. It really is a runs water. You don't even have to fish the nights because you can catch 8 or 10 fish a day. The fish are up to £50 now. There are plenty of 40 pounders in there. They're growing all the time, and the lads are doing lots of work on the lake just to keep the ecosystem going, the biomass and everything. Again, it can sleep up to 10 people in the house, and the house has many features: farmhouse kitchen, butler sink, gas oven, hob, fridge, freezer, microwave, satellite TV, leather sofas, dining table. There's a wood burner in there. There's 4 double bedrooms, all including wardrobes, bedside tables, chests of drawers, all the stuff that you need. There's darts, table tennis, as I said. There's a garden. There's a big barn for drying out all your stuff if your equipment's wet. And again, perfect for a family holiday. I mean, there's enough fish to be caught to not even have to fish the nights if you want. You can catch fish in the day and spend the evenings with your families. You can get 2 families in there if you like. And the price for 2 anglers, 2 non-anglers is £11.50 for a week. And then you can add extra anglers and non-anglers for a small charge. All sorts of freezers and everything for storing your bait. Bait can be provided at all of our venues, as can tackle and anything else that you need. There's only 10 weeks left for 2017 at Saint Armand, and we're taking bookings for 2018 as well. And there is a On the Bank in session from Ben Smedhurst, who one of the Carpcast listeners who went there last year, which you can listen on our Steve Briggs episode, I believe it was. Episode
60? 48.
48, right, I was nowhere near. I will remember that one, yeah. How can I remember that? I had 2 £48 comments. Brag. That's how I remember it. So yeah, there's also another lake on there, Casson Lac, which is a typical big fish French water where you can book the whole lake. Again, get yourself to VIP Carp Holidays, go and check out what we've got to offer there, and get in touch if you would like any more info or anything else. Anything else, Mark? Anything else on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, there's a couple. There's one. I had to mention this because I told you on the phone, and it's funny. It's from Simon Crowe's Twitter. He was dealing with a catch report at Carp Talk. And this is a fish, I believe. Did you photograph it for Roger years ago?
Yes, I did.
It's called the King of Elstow. And it was reported it has been caught from a Bedfordshire pit. Where did you think that could be, eh?
It makes me laugh because Elstow was shrouded in secrecy many, many years ago, and was always called a bed's pit, even though every single person reading Carp Talk knew where this bed's pit was. But it's just funny that they would still put bed's pit when they've actually given the name of the fish, the King of Elstow. I mean, it is a pretty fish, isn't it? A really scaly one, very unusual for the Elstow strain, which are all sort of big, no scaly type fish, typical sort of big fish.
It's an old one as well. It's good to hear it's still around.
Yeah, it's very old now. I mean, I photographed it for Roger probably 12 years ago, I would say. 11, 12 years ago, and obviously it was a high 30 then, about like that, yeah. 38, 39. How big was it in this one, do you remember?
I don't know, I've not seen it yet. You'll have to buy Carp Talk and yes, read it.
Yes, you shall, yes. Yeah. So, yeah, if you would like to catch the King of Elstow from an unnamed bed's pit, then I'm sure it won't be very hard to go and find out where it is. Never mind. Yes, funny. And thank you to Mr. Crow for bringing that one to our attention. Anything else on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Do you want to do this one? As I work for a competitor.
yes. In the fight against KHV, Eric's Angling are doing a good thing, obviously. I'm sure getting a little bit of promo out of it as well. But they're basically offering... they're saying that the best way to prevent KHV is to have on-site fish handling equipment, you know, slings, nets, mats, all that sort of stuff, which I completely agree with. Lots of lakes do that. I know a lot of lakes have fish dips as well. It remains to be seen. I've heard a few people say that fish dips aren't that effective, especially if you're bringing in wet nets and stuff already. As we know, the best way is to dry your nets out when you finish fishing on any lake. But obviously the most foolproof way is to not bring anything that's contaminated by other carp from other fisheries. And so Eric's are offering all carp care products to fisheries at trade price. From the Eric's Facebook page, it says, "Thankfully, we're stepping up our bit by offering our entire fish care range at cost price to any fishery who wants to take up our offer. This is not a business venture. We will not take a penny from doing this. We will not make a penny from doing this. We simply want to help secure the safe future of the sport we all love. If you're interested in discussing your requirements, then call Eric's on 014-304-4034. That's 01430440034. Or you can email Adam at ericsangling.co.uk and they'll be more than happy to help you. So yeah, that's a great thing. They will not make a penny from it, but it just got them an advert on the Carpcast. So, you know, every cloud and all that. Or maybe I'm just cynical, but yeah, it's a great thing, obviously, that they're doing. And we love the guys at Eric's. Eric's will be at the Northern Angling Show. Which is on the 1st and 2nd of April. Not a foolish time of year, I don't think. But yeah, more on the Northern Angling Show in future shows. But obviously tickets are on sale now. There's loads of VIP bundles and other stuff. And get yourself to northernanglingshow.co.uk for tickets and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, Eric's are there every year. Their stand is four times the size of what it was at the last show. They always had over 100 metres, and I think they're 400 metres this time in their world domination attempts.
Is that 400 square metres or just like one great big long strip?
I think it's quite a long strip because they have a number of brands this year, I haven't actually announced it on here actually. Yeah, the Daiwa are coming, and Daiwa, we've been in negotiations with them for 4 years to get them to attend the show, and they have committed now for the next Lord knows how many years, quite the considerable time. Yeah, they're going to be at the Northern Angling Show. Selling, obviously, well, Eric's are going to be doing the selling. They're working with the retailers. Obviously, the manufacturers don't sell direct, but yeah, they're going to be demoing all their stuff. They have a huge stand, and very smart it looks too. Again, you can see the pictures of their stand on the Northern Angling Show page, on Northern Angling Show Facebook page. But yeah, there's a load of big new brands there for this year. Lots of people that haven't been there before. We've doubled in size, and it was pretty big last year, as you will know. If you've never been to the Northern Angling Show, you should do, because we're having a party. We want to get the social side of carp fishing, all the good stuff, and we're having a do on the Saturday night. It's free. We're building a nice big bar catering area. It's going to be live music. We're hoping to get a comedian on as well, a fishing based comedian, a guy that I know. And it's going to be a right good do, and there may be another performance from the Carp Society Superband containing me. Now I've been playing a lot of guitar, Mark. I've had the guitar out pretty much every day. You may have seen pictures on my Facebook. I've bought these guitar stands that go on the wall. My guitars are all hanging. I've tidied my studio. I'm performing is not the right word. I'm talking to you here from an extremely clean, clinical, nice, organized studio, which you will not know this, but in the previous 18 months of the Carpcast, that's never been the case. Not at any point, but yeah. we're organised. We've got the keyboards, the guitars, a little studio set up. And in fact, there might be a way of showing this. What I would like to do in the future is to start streaming these conversations. So if you can't wait until we actually edit up and release the versions, you know, the weekly episodes of the Carpcast, then as we actually record them, i.e. say now, I'm planning to stream it. So it'll be broken up. Obviously, the when we record the guest is separate to where Mark and I record this bit. But yeah, you might be able to see our ugly mugs and my nice tidy studio in the background. What, how are you feeling about that one, Mark?
Interesting. Oh, someone did actually comment, I think it was on EP Bob's fan page recently, how after listening to the Carpcast and then finally seeing us both on Facebook, we were just nothing what he imagined we'd look like.
I've done that when I've listened to people for years on the radio and then you finally seen them on a TV programme. I mean, the rule of thumb is pretty simple. Like, if we didn't have a face for radio, we would probably be on the TV somewhere, but but we both have faces for radio, so maybe it's not a good idea to stream ourselves. Yeah. What do you think?
Oh, I don't know. We can, you know, scare little children and, you know, put pictures of us above the fire. Then that'll keep the kids away from that. I'm sure there'll be a purpose somewhere. We can't all be handsome young chaps.
Keep the burglars out.
You know, I've got a theory. Have you noticed this has been going on for a long time? How every carp that is held up on Facebook is described as a beauty or stunning.
You speak
and
to
some
any
of them just aren't.
Speak to any non-carp just angler, and even the prettiest carp in the land does not look pretty to a non-carp angler.
No, but my theory is because I mean, some of these fish, they're just like space hoppers with fins. You know, we all like a nice dark scaly thing that is stunning. But I think it's just because all the anglers are just so damn ugly.
Yes, maybe.
The old fish are stunning to us because we all fell out the ugly tree and hit the branches on the way down.
Yeah.
There's a few exceptions.
Yeah, and they all work for Corder.
Rob Hughes credit, he's handsome.
Basically, if you're a good-looking angler, you've probably got a job in angling working for one of the large companies.
Fine. I was thinking people who work for large companies, good-looking carp anglers. Could you put Gary Bayes in that category?
I decline to comment on any name that you throw at me now, because there's no net gain that can come from me giving an opinion on the looks of any angler, unless it's... No, I refuse. I will not go down this road. I'm happy dissing myself up.
What about yourself then?
Have you
seen that picture that someone posted where it says, "Women want me, fish fear me"? With a picture that was supposed to be you. It wasn't, but it was quite a good likeness.
I did see that, but where was that on our page?
I think it was. It might have originated from John Mack, I'm not sure. Was it sent as a message or something? I'm going to have to dig that one up now. But yes, I'm just trying to make myself feel better by saying all angles are ugly.
Yeah. So anyway, live streaming of the ugly ones. I think it'd be interesting. I don't think it'll ruin anybody that likes waiting for the weekly podcast, the full edited version. Obviously, you know, if you watch us record it live, it's a bit like, is it like Big Brother does Carpcast? It's a bit like a fly on the wall documentary of how we put it together.
I'm going to have to behave because I've been sat here, you know, scratching myself, picking my nose. I'm just going to have to be all prim and proper and leave my clothes on as well.
This is what I was thinking. I mean, you know, after the time we record this, I'm in my pyjamas or I'm just naked from the waist down. I mean, I'm going to have to, you know, I'm going to have to get dressed, do makeup and...
Oh dear, I won't go that far doing makeup, but yeah, I'm going to have to make a few changes. I'm just looking around now and I'm going to leave this here if we do it. Have you seen the little Star Wars Chewbacca masks where that video went viral where that woman put one on and just see if you can hear it. I've got one in front of me here. Yeah, Yeah, my wife just had to rush out and buy one. Being the geek she is.
Yeah. So, if you listen to this and you'd be interested, you know, to see us actually do it live, I mean, obviously it'll flash up, probably be on Twitch when we do it, it'll just flash up and you could either choose to watch it or not, or just drop in for a little bit of it. The beauty of it is, and we spoke about this before, is that you can participate if you've got an opinion on something we're discussing at that time, or a question for one of the guests, and we can put it straight to them. Which I think will actually help the show. I mean, you know, there is a serious reason for doing this other than just being nosy on how Mark and I record the podcast. You know, you can get involved. There's a chat box on Twitch, and, you know, if we're chatting to a Simon Scott or something and there's a question you think of that we hadn't thought of, you can type it in and, you know, we can put it to him in real time. So that's the main reason for wanting to do it. So I'm gonna make it happen. I need somebody to design me we need to make it look all nice when we do it. So I forget the technical term for the like backdrop thingy that I want. But yeah, if A, you're a designer, or B, you've got an opinion on whether you'd be interested to watch us record it live, then let us know on either the official Carpcast fan page or the usual Carpcast page. Then you will always be able to put a face to certainly Mark and I, and where internet and technology allows, then the guests may want to do it that way as well.
Do you think it's time for a quick true review?
True review.
Oh, yes. You reminded me of something I didn't put in our notes. But yes, go on.
Yeah, it's something I've been playing around with for a couple of months now. And, yeah, I've given it a good test, a practical test as well as a few bench tests. And I've got to say, it's probably the best cart line I've ever used, and coming from someone, as regular listeners will know, who've raved about the P-Line Evolution extrusion for quite a while, it's quite refreshing to find something that is actually better and totally available in British tackle shops.
And this is the Berkeley one, I guess.
Yeah, the Connect Plus line. There's four in the range. You've got the CM70, which is just it's an upgrade. It's like a copolymer monofilament. The one I've been using, the CM90, Connect Plus CM90, which is it's just the best. It's first thing I've got, I'm going to mention, is the abrasion resistance, because that was a little bugbear of mine, so I'll test everything. And now I've got a thing at work, it's a bit of plaster rod, and there's a bit of a groove in it where I've been pulling lines backwards and forwards and testing them. I've got the £18 version in the shop, so I did my test. And just to give you a bit of a benchmark, I did test another old signal dancing line recently. I'm not going to name it, but it snapped after three pulls. This £18 CM90 snapped after 29 pulls. So I was quite impressed with that. It's like a dark green in colour. It sinks. I've got the £15 on my reels at the minute, which is it's a 0.38 diameter. Yeah, I've cast it well over 100 yards, which I wanted to go out on my hike and my big pit and give it a good smashing around just to see what it did cast like before I did any reviews on it, and it's passed the test. It's very supple, and what I do like about it as well, whatever breaking string you buy it in, it's all on 1200 metre spools, and it won't break the brank either. It comes in, the CM90 is £19.99.
Send me some. I like the sound of it. I trust what you're saying as far as line goes. And like I say, the P-Line is not the easiest to get hold of. I always loved the colour of the P-Line underwater, for sure. But it's been a great line for me, the P-Line. But if you have an alternative, and especially if you are connected to said company and might be able to sling a few promo versions across to me, then even better.
Yeah, well, I've not finished yet, but yeah, I'll strip you a couple of yards off and pop it in an envelope. Yeah. But yeah, it has one thing I didn't mention was its stretch.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. Well, again, I tested it against the P-Line. I tied them both on my garden gate, walked, it's probably about 20 yards to my garage door, I'll give it, and you know, pollen, it's pretty much the same as a peline, which we both know. It puts it in the low stretch category. Great for bite indication. And also, keep an eye on our Facebook page, because I have got half a dozen spools of the 12 pound, which is 0.34, to give away. So we'll be doing some, you know, like and share sort of thing, and I'll be posting them off. And it's a competition, we'll try not to forget this time.
Are you using the 12, or which one are you using?
I've got the 15 on at the minute, but I think I will be going down to the 12 unless I need, like, you know, super abrasion resistance, because the breaking strains, like every other line on the market over here, are underrated.
I was going to say, 0.34, which is the 12, should be breaking at around 18, something like that.
It's around that, yes, and the 15, I think, breaks a little over 20. And what, the 18, what you can pull your car out the mud with.
What diameter is the 15?
The 15 is 0.38 and the 18, 0.40.
So slightly thicker than the P-line.
It is slightly thicker, but if you compare the... Well, we use a P-line in 0.35, which is rated either 16 or 21, depending where you get it from.
Yeah.
Over here or in America. But I think it is pretty much, you know, comparable. But also, there is also braid and fluorocarbon in the range coming as well, but can't really say too much about those. I've even not used them.
Cool. Okay, nice to get a true view, because we've had a few questions asking about that line, haven't we? Seems to be making waves publicly.
Yes.
While we're chatting, actually, Martin Clark's just messaged me back. He seems to be well. He's having an ECG monitor fitted tomorrow at Harefield Hospital, which will record his heart for a 24-hour period. But yeah, he's up for doing Carpcast Live in the week, so we'll have Martin on soon. And as I said earlier, we wish him all the best and hope that goes well. I've got a true review. Also,
true review.
You may or may not know. We've spoke about it a lot, Mark, but I can't remember the last time I fed or cast out a round boilie into the lake, or a lake, or any lake.
I know where this is going.
Yes. Now, I know Nash are not best pleased. I think Kevin's exact words were, oh, well, there's another edge gone. So basically, Nash spent tens of thousands of pounds buying a machine that chops boilies up, basically. Because in all the Nash range, you can buy boilie flake, which is obviously fantastic. I've used flake for years. You and I both own a it was actually an ice crusher, wasn't it?
It is a manual wind up handheld ice crusher, which yes. The Swedish call the groggy. I think it's long since discontinued, but other similar things are available on the market. And you know, I've had my fears. I still take it. I still use it, and it is, it's the nuts. I do love playing with my chopper when I get on the bank, and it's caught me lots of fish.
Yes, and I think you actually bought me mine at the same time you bought yours, which I still have as well. It's like a white top and a clear base underneath to catch the ice or boilie flake in our terms. And as you will probably know, while you are at the start of a session, we get in our peg, we get set up, and before we bait up, we sit there for 20 minutes, half hour, turning a little small handle, crushing boilies up to spot out. Once you've made them into flake, you can put liquid in them, you can actually boil it into like ground bait almost as well, which I know a lot of the Nash lads have been doing with the boilie flake that Nash sell. But anyway, Ridge Monkey have solved the problem. It's not a problem. I mean, I don't know how many people use flake. Lots of people break like round boilies up into like halves and stuff, don't they? I've seen lots of people doing that on the bank. It's definitely an edge not feeding around boilies, I think, for lots of different reasons. Gives off the attractors better when you break a boilie up. There's more surface area, so there's obviously more ways for the attraction to leak. The fact that a small amount of bait can cover a bigger area, which obviously makes using flake way better. I know Gary Bay's had a slicing machine years ago, so you could get let's say a 15 mil boilie, you could have it into like 10 slices, but obviously when they lay on the bottom, it was good for using on slopes and stuff, because obviously it doesn't roll down because they're flat, but it looks like a round boilie because it's just round slices, but obviously the fish are not filling themselves up. Which is better for colder water times of year as well. You know, a lot of people go to 10 millis and stuff in the winter. The perfect thing is flake. Now, Ridge Monkey have basically made a big ice crusher. And I have one in front of me. I was straight on to Paul saying I need one of those. I'll review
me
it
too. I want one.
Yes, well, get him emailed or you'll see him at Northern Angling Show. Ridge Monkey always have a massive stand. So if you were going to design a large boilie crusher, I couldn't have done it better myself. All the things that you think you would need to do, they have done in this bucket. Now, they're not the only company to release a bucket this week. Have you noticed the Traco one with holes in? Have you seen?
I have seen a brief thing. I can't say I've taken a massive amount of notice of it, but I have seen a quick clip as it's popped up on my Facebook page. That's where you just... Yeah, well, lift it out and it just drains all the juice from your particles, and you can just spot out without having to pick them out of your hair when you're finished.
Yeah, I always use the bucket lid and just tip it over, crack the bucket lid slightly and tip it over. I like the fact that you can actually keep the juice. Obviously if you're using, it's basically like a strainer, isn't it? It's like a bucket in a bucket with a load of holes in the bottom. It's like a sieve. But we're not true reviewing that. I thought it was an interesting idea. A lot of people are like, it's a bucket with holes. They have designed it well by the look of it. Maybe we'll have a look at Traco one at a later stage. But if you are going to design a bucket for the purpose of crushing boilies, Ridge Monkey have done it. It's fantastic. I'm looking at it right now. It's a 17 litre, really well made bucket that I'm presuming will double up as a seat for most of my guests come and visit. I will have to, I might even have to start taking guest cups again when I've been fishing down at Church and Cops. Kevin walks around with his dog in the mornings, and I suddenly thought the other day, because I don't carry spare brewing kit at the minute, I've not offered him a brew at any point on any morning. So Kevin, I'm truly sorry. I would judge people by how long it took them to offer me a cup of tea when I walked into their swim for the last 25 years, as I think you probably do as well, Mark.
Without a doubt.
I've got
to give you this tip though. I've got two guest mugs.
Yeah.
Because I grade people. If I don't like them, then they just don't get a brew. Or if I want to be social, but I don't want them there too often, I've got like a thin plastic mug. That's going to get rid of them quicker because it's going to cool off quicker. But if they're good company, they get one of me proper insulated carton mugs and they have a good brew and a good chat.
Oh, GTO brew strategy. I love it. I love it. Shout out to Kevin. I apologise for not making you a brew. And I used to take three cups as well because I was always super sociable. Big thing of tea bags. I don't take sugar in anything. I don't have sugar on me Weetabix in the morning, and I don't have sugar in a brew. But I would always bring a pot of sugar for guests. And I just haven't in the last couple of years. And I feel extremely bad. I promise you we'll have a cup of tea every morning you come and visit me in future, Kev. But you can also sit on my Ridge Monkey bucket should you like, because it's a cracking bit of kit. It comes with two compartments on the inside, which you can actually use. Have you seen buckets that have got like a couple of compartments that just sit in the top? So if you're using a bucket as like, carry your bait, and you can carry a load of rig stuff in there. Well, this has it. This also has that. It has a great big chopper that comes in its own separate little nice Ridge Monkey bag. You can do a kilo of boilies in under 2 minutes. There are YouTube videos demonstrating exactly this. It's really tough. It looks like really well made plastic. It's got all different lids and everything you need, and you can get these little extending bits that pop in the top, so you can actually do a 5 kilo bag. I can believe you can do a 5 kilo bag in about 3 minutes. You just pour the whole lot into the top and keep turning. I'm absolutely made up that Ridge Monkey have done this, number one, because I think it's great. But I'm slightly disappointed that an edge has gone. The masses will now have flaked and chopped boilies. Because it's great, Nash having the machine that does them, but, you know, boilies are expensive. So, you know, maybe you would order 5 key of normal boilies and 5 key of flaked boilies, but you don't know how much flake you're going to use on any given session. And the beauty of obviously having a crusher with you permanently, and one that does it very quickly, if you want to put all your bait out in flake, you can just sit there for a few minutes and crush it up. If you only want to put a little bit on one spot, you can do that as you go. And obviously those little ice crushes, it takes forever. It doesn't take that long to do a kilo, does it? But it takes a lot longer than the 60 seconds that this Ridge Monkey takes.
I'm looking forward to getting my hands on one myself, because, you know, when I saw it come out, it was it did bring a smile to my face. But the surprising thing is, why has it not been done sooner by someone else? You know, it's a cracking piece of kit.
We actually looked at doing a Carbcast one, didn't we? But we looked on Alibaba's and we were just going to buy like an ice crusher and put our own stickers on it and basically because it was such a good edge. But, you know, obviously we won't be doing that now. Ridge Monkey have just basically smashed it out of the park. They've done exactly what needs doing. You know, there's a bucket, you can keep your 5 key bag of bait in the bottom of the bucket, carry it all to the lake, got little compartments to keep extra bits in the top, and crush up whatever you like. Either keep them in the separate compartments if you want to keep it separate from your normal bait, or whatever. It's a really big sort of metal robust handle that it's just great. I'm excited about a bucket. I don't know why, but a fantastic bit of gear. And I think it's called the Advanced Boilie Crusher. It's from Ridge Monkey. You'll see them at all the shows this winter, including the Northern Angling Show. And you can buy them from all the Ridge Monkey stockists. And I cannot recommend a piece of equipment anymore. I just wish we'd have thought of it.
Yeah, or thought of it and had the means to do it.
Yeah, the means to do it, you know. It didn't even cross my mind just to do a bigger one. You know, when we looked at putting a boilie crusher in the, or an ice crusher in the Carbcast shop, like, I just thought of doing an ice crusher. My brain's not creative enough to go, I'm just make a bigger one. But manufacturing is not my skill.
No, mine neither, but I'm glad there's people out there that it is, because it blesses us with such good gear nowadays.
Yes, certainly. Okay, while on the subject of the Carbcast shop, it's the only place you can currently buy the Key Cray, unless you visit one of these shows during the winter. But if you're not attending any of the shows, or you want it earlier, then if you go to the Carbcast shop, we're doing a pack, a 10 kilo bag for I think it's $79.99. comes with a tub of pop-ups. You can have either 15mm, 20mm or 5 key of each with a tub of pop-ups, and you can add some dip onto the order, or an extra tub of either size pop-ups. There's plenty of other stuff. Christmas is coming for gifts in the Carbcast shop. There's My Knowledge DVDs. You can buy Kevin Nash's Memoirs of a Carp Fisher book at the cheapest price anywhere. I think it's like nearly a tenner cheaper than pretty much anywhere else you can buy it. Get over to the Carbcast shop, www.thecarpcast.com. And talking of Christmas gifts, Christmas presents and stuff, then there's no better place to go than the aptly named Gifts for Anglers. They're the largest online shop for fishing books, DVDs and gifts. They stock hundreds of carp books and DVDs, from the latest releases to old age favourites. They also stock clothing and headwear from many brands such as Fox, Chunk, Fatfish, Navitas, Tracker, Corda, Mainline, Nash, Fortis and Monkey Climber. Some of this week's additions to the shops are the new Monkey Climber navy and black Cousteau beanies, as well as the black mug. There's also the Ridge Monkey utensils, which fit inside the toasters, and new headwear items and new hoodies for the winter from Fatfish. There are also hundreds of carpy and angling angling related gifts, perfect for Christmas and birthday presents, such as socks, mugs, personalized front covers and carp shaped pillows, of which I have one. They also stock is of the Ridge Monkey Tracker cooking accessories, the new Fisherflage log books, which are perfect for anglers that like to keep a detailed log. Make the perfect gift. They're just $9.99 and you can get them in carp or pike design. Some of the recent books that have been released are in there. You can get Simon Crow's Adventures of a Carp Angler, Dave Levy's Fallen Kings, Every Bit of Blue by Frank Warwick, and all the Subsurface Collective books. There's also The Black Mirror Cult by Mark Connington, who also wrote the very popular Syndicate series. The new book is the first part of the Syndicate series volume 2 and is set 10 years after the events that took place in the Syndicate's and the other series. There's a sales section as well on the website. The sales section, there's DVDs, books, gifts and clothing, loads of stock with mega reductions reduced to clear, such as A History of Carp Fishing by Kevin Clifford, the Bible for anybody interested in their carp fishing history. That's only £30, which is a tenner off. Chris Ball's Best of the Famous Catches, just $17.99, where it was $25.99. Gaz Farum's Forgotten Chapters is in there for only £25. That's a fiver off. And many more top carp titles reduced, such as Basil's Bush, Fox Pool, Tiger Bay, all the very famous Rob Mailing books. Gifts for Anglers are offering an extra discount for all Carpcast listeners. If you go to www.giftsforanglers.co.uk, the four is the actual number four, so it's www.giftsforanglers.co.uk, and if you enter the code CARPCAST10 at the checkout, then you can get an extra 10% off everything I've just mentioned. Only thing it doesn't include is subscriptions and gift vouchers. But pretty much any carpy gift or other gifts as well, it's not just carp stuff in there, then you can get a discount. And great with Christmas coming up, give your missus the web address and tell her and she can get a discount. The offer's valid till the 31st of January, so 2017. So get them in and get some nice prezzies for Christmas. This has been a long one, and we've not done all the stuff on the notes. I did want to talk about spots, but should we save that for next week?
Yeah, I think you should get some cream.
Yes, spots.
I've not even talked about the fish I caught this week. Oh, I caught a carp.
Really? Go on, tell us, because you might not catch fish next week.
Should we save it for next week and drag it out? Should we leave it as a cliffhanger?
Yes, yeah, and I wasn't planning on fishing next week, but I just looked at the weather forecast. Have you seen it for next weekend?
Yeah.
Double figures day and night, and 20 mile an hour southerlies and southwesterlies. There's no way that the fish are going to stay quiet next week. No way at all. I fished, I've done loads of fishing actually, and I'm blanking currently, but yeah. There'll be more to report next week, and we'll talk about your fish next week, I think.
Yeah, we will. And on that bombshell...
shall we get John Mack?
I think we should.
Yes. So, we're pleased to welcome back to the Carpcast the geezer from Kent, Mr. John Mack. How are we, pal?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. I'm glad you got it right this time. I think last time you said Essex.
I always think you're an Essex geezer, but you're not. It's a Kent geezer, isn't it?
Kent's a big place, mate. It's from just outside sort of South London down to the White Cliffs of Dover. But yeah, I'm sort of closer to the London part, but that's probably why I sounded a bit more like that.
So
a bit I believe... more like what you call an Essex geezer.
Yeah, there's a bit of rivalry, isn't there, Kent and Essex?
It's all friendly banter.
A little bit
like Manchester and Liverpool, I think.
Manchester, Liverpool, Lancashire, Yorkshire. I'm sure they probably battled each other and pillaged their wives and money back in the day, I guess.
Yeah. How you doing though? All good up there?
All good, mate. All good up in the north.
Crack on with it. good in the north. You know I love the north, mate.
Yes, I know you have an affinity with Manchester, especially.
I've been
lived there for a while, I believe.
Yeah, we like it up north. Well, I do anyway.
Yeah, what's your plans with the Northern Angling Show? Are you going to get up this year?
When is it? What month is it in?
It's 1st and 2nd of April. It is. So
NAS 17.
NAS 5, I think. But yeah, 1st and 2nd of April it is this year.
I'm not sure what I'm doing, obviously, with my sponsors, like Witchwood and all that, but even if they're not going or whatever, I will do my best to come up there, because we always have a good jolly up, don't we?
We do, and Witchwood, JRC and Chubb are all attending this year, all of them, so...
Yeah. Well, you know, it's all good and well going with the boys at Witchwood, but it restricts you a little bit, you know, so if I'm not going with them... Then maybe I'll try and get up there and crash out around yours or around Dave's or something. But yeah,
it's always a bed for your geese. We Reedy lives not too far outside the venue now, and it's gonna be good this year. We've gone bigger.
Yeah, brilliant.
Bigger. Yeah, it's really big. We've almost doubled in size this year because we were full last year.
So, yeah, last year I missed it, and I know it was a very good one, and it was. Good to see me old muckers doing well, mate.
Good. Thank you very much. So I believe you're fishing, aren't you?
Yeah, just got down. What's the time now? It's 6:20. Just got down. I don't know, on dark. And I'm down this 80-acre, no publicity pit in Kent, basically. Yeah, it's really nice. Really hard lake, though. Ain't been nothing out for about a month at least, probably.
That might change this week. Have you seen the weather coming?
Yeah, 2 days' time. We've got some sort of mild sort of weather. Southwesterly, south-southwesterlies, nice temperatures at night. But last week, it was like -6 for a couple of nights down here. And a few of the smaller lakes froze, but I was out on the big lake doing it, and nothing. But it's a nice lake, mate. It's you only allow to fish one side of it. It's quite elongated, 80 acres, a couple of narrow bits that's probably 200 yards across the other side, but obviously you can't quite reach, and they are always over the other side. It's an interesting venue, mate. At the start of the season, obviously we do a draw. It's during the 16th, sort of traditional start. And you might be lucky if a week or two or three in, they venture across to have a little nose in this little bay, to sort of have a little consider about spawning, and maybe one or two will get caught in there, but then they get pushed out. And then that's it until about October. And then in October it'll do a few. This October fished pretty well, I had a couple out.
Are the rewards in there?
Yeah, you know, there's a handful of 40s, you know, but there's no 50s or, like, you know, massive cheeses sort of thing. But it's nice old lake. I've known about it many, many years, but I only fished it the last couple of years. Well, I had a ticket last year and I can only do days, so I just didn't fish it. This is my first year that I can do nights. And, it's really nice. I'm adapting to the long range sort of fishing, so I'm fishing sort of up to about... 148, 152 yards, sort of straight through, like mainline, no leaders and all that.
Is it one of those waters where the further you can cast, the more chance you got?
Certain times of the year, possibly, yeah. But come October, it's really strange. I think they deplete the naturals over the other side and they just come over and they get caught. They get clumped in October.
Right.
They just can't resist it. And I'm sure it's... I've never witnessed it quite like this on anywhere else, but it must purely be because the naturals are depleted. They're over there all year, and then they have to feed up for the winter, and they've got to come and get their boilies. They like their boilies, but they don't ever come over in the summer. They're over the other side.
Weird. And which way do the winds blow?
Southwesterly blows down one end, and the northeasterly blows up the other. It's quite nice.
Yeah. Yes.
But they're over there. You can't get to them.
Yeah.
And, it's a tight sort of thing. It's a club. There's you know, wildlife people, bird hides. You can't get away with anything over there. And, you know, there's a lot of members down here that I know, and it's just one of those things. No one does it.
Yeah.
No one does it, you know. We just play the game and wait for them to come to us.
Sounds like a tricky one, or interesting one anyway. And you like the winter fishing anyway, don't you? You come into your own in the winter, don't you?
Yeah, I think we done an interview last year, and I think I was probably down Mill Lane. I love it this time of year, mate. But like you say, bring it on. The harder the challenge, the greater the reward, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. I've been having this discussion a lot recently. I mean, I doubt you've kept up with the carp cast, but obviously been a lot of talk recently with this, you know, the 70-pound fish and... We've done it to death now, so without going massively into it. But fishing is about the reward, and the reward varies. I mean... another lady died before you caught it, but it took Terry 60 odd nights. It was probably a really nice capture for him. Took Daryl 60 odd, took me 60 odd.
Yeah.
Like, I know some people that caught it on the first day. Now, it probably doesn't mean quite as much to the people that didn't have to work for it, to the ones that do have to work for it, if you know what I mean. Even though it was quite, you know, the fish did get caught regular, but the lake was tricky and whatever. And It's sometimes the journey, isn't it, rather than the actual bit at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I love fishing up there, and I see that fish on the bank numerous occasions, photographed it, Eddie had it, our mate Eddie, and I photographed that on numerous occasions. I knew when it was going to come out. It was always on a new moon with a sort of grey overcast sky, and you just like, it's going to come out, and you look across and some bloke that's only been down on his first trips into one, and you're just, you know what's about to happen. And yeah, that fish was very catchable, but I never caught it. Done 3 years on there. But like you say, it's all about individual goals and all that. What floats your boat? I mean, I've no doubt the guy that caught the big fish thoroughly enjoyed it, but yeah, it's not for everyone. That's, you know, that's the way it is.
No, it's like I say, fishing's personal, isn't it? It's different to different people. Yeah. Sometimes you want to fish abroad.
I think we're getting too long in the tooth to sit here, and like you say, you've already done it to death, so let's not go over it, but I think we're too long in the tooth and getting a bit on for mind you, I suppose, because you do this show, that you have to cover these things. But for me personally, I kind of want to step away from all of that sort of politics of fishing these days. I just enjoy meeting people, having a laugh, going fishing and doing my thing, you know.
It is, it's a hobby and it's enjoyment, isn't it? I mean, it's a job for a very small amount of people, but generally we do it for fun, don't we? We do it because we like it, because we get excited, because, you know, we get a reward every now and again, and in the meantime we enjoy being out there doing it. So people forget that sometimes, don't they? And you know, it's a big industry now. I mean, as you know, I mean, you've got involved in more in the industry this last year, haven't you, with the bait firm. How's that going?
Yeah, oh, the bait firm's great. Proper Carp Baits. It's doing really well. Been going about sort of 16 months or whatever it is. Can't complain. It's not easy, mate. I mean, we do have a proper unit. We've got overheads. We've got rent to pay. We make our own stuff, place mixes, roll our own baits. A lot of people sort of say they're a bait firm, buy it off one individual that's especially well known down here in Kent, and get it sent to them, send it out to their mates and call themselves a bait firm. they do make it quite hard for the likes of us and other, like what I call proper bait firms, like legitimate bait firms that are doing their own stuff. I said to Sean the other day, I said, it's a little bit slow. You know, we're doing all right, John. Look at the stock, and, you know, when we started off, we had X amount of money put into ingredients, and now obviously we've got a website which cost us $6,000. We've got the same amount of ingredients in stock, or if not more. We're getting them cheaper because we're buying them bulk. We've got, you know, stock of boilie there waiting to go out. All of our base three in the range that we do, red, the black and the gold seal. and like the amount of pop-ups, wafters and all the rest of it that are sat there all potted up and ready to go out, which is, believe it or not, a vast, there's quite a lot of value in what's sitting there now, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, we haven't really been drawing much of a wage out of it. It's all going straight back in. So I'm still sort of pretty skint. but it's buoyant and it's looking better for next year, like, you know? So hopefully next year, proper carp baits. Again, we're getting in carp talk every now and then, and a few of our anglers are catching, you know, some nice fish and getting a little bit more notice now, like, you know, the page is getting plenty of followers, like over 7,000 now in the first year. So yeah, it's doing all right, mate, you know, can't complain.
And well, you've took on a very big name as well, haven't you? A person that's probably launched a number of bait companies by association over the last few years, and that's Jim Shelley, isn't it? And he seems to have been catching from the off on the bait, so there's no doubt it's quality gear.
Well, I know it's quality, but everyone that sells bait will tell you that. However, and I've no doubt that a lot of them are, but ours is up there with the best. Can't say it's better than anyone or everyone, because, you know, as long as you're using the top quality ingredients, which we do at optimum levels, then you're going to produce a good bait. And I'd be foolish or stupid to say that ours is better than everyone, because it's not. It's up there with the best. But Jim, yeah, he came on with us, and I think, well, I don't know, he was catching from the off, and I do know that it has raised his game a little bit, to be fair, using our gear. I mean, he's had, I think he had 440s in 16 days from 3 different venues. and like, he's a machine, isn't he? He's a catching machine, love him or hate him. He does what he does, and he's good at it. And yeah, you know, he will help, obviously, elevate the company, no doubt.
Without a doubt. I mean, you know, Sticky are probably the biggest company in the country now, and, you know, a lot of that's to do with, obviously, they run it well, they've spent fortunes on marketing, advertising, done it really well. But, you know, not many people would have heard of them in the early days till Jim was involved. No, so
I've known about that firm, Sticky Bakes, for a long time, before they, you know, before probably 95% of your listeners would have ever have known about it, and they were fairly small. But yeah, Tom's done a very good job there. You know, and look, you know, there's a lot of bitching in the bait world as well as the angling side. You know, like, the anglers are bitches, but I'm not one of them, and I credit where credit's due. He's done a good job, and all I want to do is have a little piece of the pie, mate. I don't want to set the world alight. I don't want to claim that I'm big and better than anyone else. I just want to produce something that's a very affordable price, that's top quality, and I'm sure, you know, it'll have longevity, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm just on the website now, actually. You've done a good job of the website.
It's nice, it's really user friendly. Obviously, all the W's, propercartbaits.co.uk. Yeah, you can go online, buy all their gear. All the range is there. It's really easy to order, purchase. We've got Sage Pay, PayPal, pay on your cards, do it, you know, you can pay any way you want, really. We're doing a winter offer at the moment, which is £70 for 10 kilos, plus wafters and pop-ups, all delivered. So the delivery costs us a tenner. The pop-ups and all the wafters are a fiver each normally, or £6 normally. So you're getting your bait for about a fiver a kilo if you get that winter sessions pack. That's on the gold seal at the minute. We're doing that in 14 millimetres. So the winter sessions pack on the gold seal, £70 delivered with all your bits and bobs. It's a fair deal, and it's done very well, to be honest. A lot of people are going for that at the minute.
That's a decent price. Just undercut me. I'm selling Key Cray at the minute for the same pack, but £80. So you've done me.
Yeah. It's a fair price, mate. You know, other companies are doing the same thing, so we can't sit on our laurels and just sort of say, no, that's our price. You know, it is winter. There aren't as many people out on the banks. So our slogan, as it is don't get left behind. And I think if we'd have, We've sort of obviously followed suit, really. There's a lot of companies doing a similar sort of thing, so you got to go with it, haven't you?
What's that Pro Amino liquid that you do? Is that like a...
That's a hydrolyzed fish protein liquid. It's really good. It's very good quality. most people use that as a glove type of thing on the sort of fish meals that we sell, like for the, in the summer. But I've no doubt it'll work well even now. It's not heavy in oil, as it were.
And what's the difference between the red, black and the gold then? Are they completely different? I mean, I completely get the naming from the old school.
Well, it's not really that. I mean, what it started off was we had a red one and a gold one and we had a brown one, but we were sort of thinking the names and we said, oh, you know, like red seal, gold seal, it's like a stamp of quality. It's not just that sort of Mickey Mouse take on the old school stuff that people used to smoke, but yeah, there's that side to it. But then I thought, oh, do you know what, let's keep it in suit instead of having a red seal and a gold seal and then something else, we just called the brown one the black seal. But basically, we've got the red and the black. They're two fish meals, LT94, CPSP 90 pre-digested fish meal, so a blend of the two, high protein milk powders, low levels of bird food, we've got wheat germ, minimum levels of sort of binders. The quality ingredients are there in abundance, and those two fish meals really are top quality, and the difference mainly is the red one contains hay swabbing red, chili, smoked paprika, black pepper essential oil and a cream powder palatant, and the other one is a little bit more sort of like a garlic, asafoetida, blue cheese, and oh, there's some big ripples coming in.
Yeah.
There's some ripples coming in there. The blue cheese with fenugreek, and that's a brown boilie, and it's done very well. Funny thing is, the red seal was our number one seller last year. Jim came on board. He liked the black seal. He started using it and catching it from the off. And as soon as he came on board, the black seal outsold everything.
I like the sound of both of them, to be honest. The garlic one and the chili one.
The thing is, people ask me, what's the best one, John? And I really can't tell them because the basic makeup of the baits, the two are pretty much the same,
yeah,
other than the finishing touches. So the quality is, basically we offered one which was red and one which was not, and that's purely because some people like Robin Red and some people don't. That was it. And then with the gold seal, which is basically an outright bird food with higher levels of milk proteins, and that's like a banana and aniseed sort of twist sort of to the bait, you know, and it contains, all three contain like a high grade liver powder as well, including in the bird food one. Always good to have a bit of liver powder in the bird foods. But yeah, that's sort of yellowy gold in colour, and it's doing very well at the minute. I'm sitting behind my rods now and I'm fishing with that one now.
I like the sound of all of them. What are you doing to me?
There they are, honestly. You know, I mean, I know there's a lot of great baits out there, but they are good, and it took us quite a long time to come up with the base mixes sort of thing to get them right. But yeah, I've been in the factory today rolling, done a little free mix of 180 keys today, just stocked up a few, you know, the freezers here and there. So Sean lives near the unit in Essex, and I obviously live in Kent, and he's local to send out, dispatch anything, you know, because we've got eBay shop, we've got, so you can find us on eBay just by typing in proper car baits, or you can go on the website again, you know, already mentioned. And like people quite often just buy a pot of pop-ups, and for me to drive into work, just to do these sort of bagging up or packaging up is a bit long-winded, but obviously Sean lives nearby and he can do all of that sort of thing, you know. That works really well.
What about your own fishing this year? Have you done a great deal? Have you been too busy?
Hang on a minute. I'm just standing outside. That was a bloody fish out there.
Is it definitely a fish, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Ooh, that's a good sign. There's been a few fish caught in the last 24 hours. I don't know if they know that this decent weather's coming, but you know, just looking at my Facebook feed, that there's been the odd fish caught. So
yeah, like on Facebook you do see, don't you, it dwindles, doesn't it, the catch reports just dwindle. But we try and put our catch reports off our page. But what was I saying anyway? I think I've got a star track then.
Are you fishing this year? Have you had a chance to do much?
Well, obviously in the summer now, I was too busy working. But yeah, got my daughter at weekends. But yeah, now this time of year, I sort of comes into my own, I get a bit more time. And I've, like I say, I've been on this no publicity water, and I've had a couple here and there. And that's about it, really. But yeah, I'm enjoying my fishing, that's for sure. You know, I'm really enjoying it at the minute, down here.
Have you been over to France much?
I've been over there at the start of the season. Obviously, we've got the lake over there, if that's what you're relating to. Yeah. Tanger Bernier. That one on Facebook again, or the website, you can find it, Tanger Bernier. So, yeah, I was over there at the start of the season. We had a lot of problems over there this year. You know, when the Olympics were on, weren't they? And Paris flooded.
Yeah.
The Olympics, something was on, major sporting event. And so Paris had some floods, which is unusual. Basically, you got the Seine, the Marne, and oh, I can't remember what the other one is, but they all run in, run up, basically they all join and they go through Paris, and all the three regions surrounding the three rivers had heavy rainfall in May.
Mm.
Then come June, a lot of areas flooded, and we took some flood water on it. It's pretty bad this year, and it did knock back the fishing. I've got to say it, you know, it knocked the fishing back, and I just looked back a few years ago when I fished on Dinton Pastures. That lake one year had a pretty major flood and it knocked the fishing back for a couple of years. But moving forwards for us, we've just secured a deal actually today for some fish. Just want to improve it, you know, as our ongoing sort of stocking program, as it were. I mean, we put in couple of hundred fish on top of what was already there. So there's probably about 350 fish in the lake at the time. And it fished really well for the first 2 years of business, but this year, after the floods, it sort of slowed right down. I don't know whether that was like a culmination of the two factors, those being obviously, one, the flood, and then secondly, the fish had been caught after sort of being put in their new environment and pressured. They had found one area that they can kind of get away a little bit, which is my ideally more suited to the long range sort of type of angler, but it's only sort of one area. They don't really get out of the way, if I'm honest. They're still up and down the lake when there's a few on and they get caught. But yeah, we've got about another 80 fish going in this winter. I think we've lost 5, 6, 7 fish each year, so you know, 15 to 20, you know, you can't you know, it happens, like due to spawning or whatever, or coming out of the winter period in the spring, you lose 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fish, whatever. So yeah, we're putting another 80. So yeah, you know, it'll fish really well. It'll fish its head off next year, because basically what happens, a lot of them sort of find their comfort zone, and then a new influx of fish come in and they're getting beaten to the sort of spots where the bait is, so they've got to feed a bit harder. And the weight gains have been great, 5 to 7 pounds on average for sort of each year. But a lot of the fish that we're putting in this winter are mid-20s. But we've got also 10 bigger ones, sort of like, not massive by French standards, but I tell you, you know, when we bought our fish, the 39 pounders that went in, some of, like one or two of them are sort of like 57 pound now, like, you know, they really do pack it on. But these ones, we've got, I think, what, 5 low to mid 40s and 5 sort of upper 40s. No doubt those 5 will be 50s straight away within a few months after eating a lot of bit of boilie and that. But yeah, like, the future's bright for the lake. And I look forward to seeing the catch reports coming in, and they'll be going up on Facebook next year. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to put fish in for the next 3 winters. So this will be the first, well, our second stocking, as it were. But then we're going to do winter 17, and then winter 18, and that'll be it done. But yeah, we'll have a very good head of fish in there then, and these ones we're getting off the fish farmer. There are lakes that I know of, won't go into what names they are, in France that are very well known. A lot of the viewers or the listeners will know, and they've got some very big fish off this fish farmer from the growth rates that his fish, you know, manage. So yeah, I'm excited about that.
Future's bright. We may get a trip over there one year with you.
I did say to you last year, anytime, you know, if you want to get out there, if I can come with you, or we can go together, or we can organise a social, you know, with your I mean, I don't know if you're still doing it, but I know you used to do a social thing. So, you know, the options are there for you, mate, if you want to.
Yes, jump on it. Certainly. Any listeners fancy a trip with myself and John Mack? This is off the top of my head, but I'm sure we can sort of price out. If how many does the lake take? If there's me and you, how many other people could come?
The lake, basically, I mean, we are a drive and survive outfit. It's 240 miles from Calais. It takes about 3 to 3.5 hours if you don't mess about. And it's about 28 acre.
Yeah.
We've got 13 swims. Maximum we allow on is 12. But we've got 5 double swims and 8 singles. And quite often you'll find 8 to 10 anglers in those 4 to 5 doubles. And then there's a couple of anglers, you know, sort of like tossing up between the last sort of 6 or 8 swims or whatever. But there's always a bit of room. Well, I like to keep it to 10. 10 is a very nice number on the lake. We've got on-site facilities, you know, like showers, toilets, really spotless, well-kept sort of facilities, barbecues around the lake, all near shops and everything. The big, massive tackle shops, supermarkets, everything is like within 3 mile radius, basically. And everything is there. It's really a good location for a driver to survive. Set up. You can drive around the lake, parking all your swims. Really nice. Really, really good setup.
Right, we'll sort a date after this. Me and you and eight Carpcast listeners are going to have a trip there. Just the right size. Sounds nice, to be honest. So, let's do that.
We're open from April till the end of October, but obviously if you want to squeeze a winter session in, we can do a winter one. They do come out in the winter.
Yeah, maybe, maybe just before you open or something, maybe end of March or something like that.
March would be good.
Yeah, all right.
We've got freezing cold for the punters.
Yeah, well, after we get off this, let's pick a date. Let's pick a day and let's do it. Yeah. So you've heard it here first.
You might get a few interested listeners that like fancy it, and it might hurry us along a little bit.
I'd definitely pay money to go and fish with Johnny Mack. So it's a no brainer. We'll get that sorted after this. But yeah, if you want to reserve a place. Before it goes on sale, if you're potentially up for a week in March, then send us a message, send me a message on our Carpcast Facebook page or to me. Yeah, well, I look forward to that. We'll definitely get that sorted. A week with Johnny Mack and myself on in France, and hopefully the sun will be out then. It's been a funny year weather-wise. I don't know if you've noticed with the catch reports and stuff, but we had such a mild winter last year. Then we had a super cold spring, which basically killed everything for a little while. Then we had a red-hot summer, and then it's like we've bypassed the autumn, and we're just straight into winter with no autumn. I mean, I know you haven't done tons of fishing yourself, but you've probably been keeping an eye on it with your field testers and you know, customers and stuff. It's a weird one, isn't it? I think we had a few fish deaths because of that hot summer and like no spring, and it's been a weird year for fishing. I'm fishing down south this winter, and it's just like, I'm like, why can't it be like last winter, you know, when we didn't have a frost till February, I think, or March? But
I can't really remember what it was like, because I just enjoy it being out in it, and but yeah, I don't, yeah, it's jumped in sort of, I don't know, I mean, we've had a cold week last week. I've done, like I say, a couple of -6s, and like a few of the promo guys on our bait, and that, funnily enough, a couple of decent ones come out of the Manor, Essex Manor, last week and the week before, like one guy, Danny Woodhouse.
Was it in the -5 or before it?
Yeah, -6 we had down here, and bit cold for down here, mate. And one of our guys, Danny Woodhouse, he had a nice 30-pound fully scaled, and he had Stella at 46 as well the week before on the red bait, on the red silk, spicy red one. But yeah, it's been really quiet on fish on the bank until last week.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was fishing myself. I was in Essex as well last week, and the lake froze up on us at -5 one night and -6 the next night. It was, I mean, it's still comfortable in the equipment. It's just not great for fishing, is it, as a rule? But
I love it.
I like being out in it. The still nights and stuff I like.
Beautiful, mate.
I love that September, October.
Here now, if you could see where I am, it is an 80-acre mill pond. Yeah. And it's like, there's an ever so slight sort of quarter moon. It's on the right side, so it's waxing. Just obviously come out of a new moon. And it's in the sort of... Oh, mate, the misty sort of low cloud that's out there, it just looks so nice where I am tonight.
You're somebody, you mentioned the moon a couple of times. Some people think the moon is complete witchcraft and nonsense, and other people, you know, obviously you fish when you can, but some people know the patterns. You've obviously dealt, you know, on St. Ives with the lady, and that was a new moon fish, if ever there was one. I mean, yeah. Have you come across that a lot? Do you judge your sessions by the moon, or, you know, will you pick a moon, mate, if you can?
Massive. I'm not really targeting single fish as much as I used to these days. But it was when I was targeting the big fish that I really took on that moon phase, sort of the notes, as it were, and the history of the captures and the previous captures of fish. And, like, categorically, yes, there's something in it. I'm going to say now, it's not always a full moon is a big common night, but a certain lake will respond to a new moon, or a certain fish in that lake that you might be targeting will respond to a new moon, or it'll be the other way and it'll respond to a full moon. As an example, right, you had the black mirror at the mirror was generally a new moon fish.
Yeah.
Fat lady was always new moon. Two-tone, when I used to fish there, was a new moon fish, but there was Vinishow down in Chichester in Sussex, another great lake. It's got, you know, a well-known sort of fish in there. They'll call it the seaside simo, but most of the fish are proper pucker old ones. But that one always used to come out on a full moon. Always. I mean, I lost it on the July full moon, and then caught it on the August full moon. I knew I'd lost it. I'd seen it nutting out over my baited area. I'd had six fish or something that session, which is a session of a lifetime on there. And I knew that I'd seen it, and I lost this big fish, and that was the end of the bites and the end of everything. And that I just knew, I caught the one as well that it's always swimming with, and then I lost this big fish. Overcooked it a bit on a little bit of a side, on a side sort of strain on to my left, and pulled the hook out, and I just knew what one it was. Went back 4 weeks later on the August full moon and caught it.
Did you already know it was a full moon fish at that point?
Yeah, I already know. Christchurch. Not Stoneacres. It's Christchurch, isn't it? The one next door to Stoneacres.
Yeah.
That lake fishes best on the third quarter of the moon phase.
I'm writing that down. I've fished it a couple of times this year.
A lot of people that listen to this probably go to Christchurch.
Yeah, definitely.
And that lake definitely fishes better on the last quarter, which is when it's waxing, waning, last quarter, last week of the 4 week phase. So the week before the full moon is good.
That's interesting. I mean, there's some people listening to this going to be going, you two are crazy, but I'm the same, that there's always patterns and we don't always know why, but just be aware of them. And have you ever found the full moon lakes tend to be shallower lakes, say, because I always associate the new moon with low pressure and the full moon with high pressure, and some lakes fish better in high pressure, some fish better in low pressure.
To be honest, I've been monitoring these moon phases, and I'll be blatantly honest, I've been monitoring this for over 20 years, you know.
Yeah.
And there is something in it, but I can't put anything in regards to what you're saying as in depth of lake and low pressure and high pressure. It's either one will respond to a full moon or one will respond to a new moon, and there's no rhyme nor reason to which it is.
Yep. And,
but there's something in it, it's worth noticing it, like you said, you can't, like, people go, oh, yeah, but if I went fishing when it was only a full moon, I would only go fishing. But no. Obviously, there are opportunities outside these windows, but these windows of opportunity are, like, blatantly there to be capitalised on.
Yeah, and I always think conditions override anything else. Like this week coming up, we've got some extremely good conditions. We've had minus figures. We've had a lot of high pressure and cold winds, northerlies and easterlies for weeks now. And then we've got some double figures at nights, southerlies, south-southwesterlies. Yeah. And it's on a really bad moon phase. But I guarantee it's going to be some big fish caught, you know, towards the end of this week. Guarantee it.
It's got to happen. Well, I mean, yeah, I'd like to think so. But on this lake particularly, it's really tricky. So if I was on anywhere else that was a little bit more predictable, I'd say, this coming week, there will be fish out and you'll see it all over Facebook.
Yeah, a big fish week, I reckon. There's going to be some kippers caught.
Seven now, isn't it?
It's what, 7?
December, sorry.
Oh, December, yeah. Is it a winter capture now? Probably is from the 1st of December.
I think I don't know what the Facebook police call winter these days. But I think the 1st of December is some sort of winter sort of thing.
Yeah. I think I'm going to Google it now, but I've got a feeling the winter solstice is, which is the official start.
I just want to say something as well now. A lot of people that are probably thinking, oh, I ain't really been fishing for a little while. I think, not sure what date it is, you might want to check this out. I tell you now, it's around about the 23rd of December, it's the shortest day of the year. So sooner or later, listeners, it's going to be, the days are going to be getting longer.
Yeah, we're and almost on the upside, aren't we?
People say to me, oh, I don't know how you do that, but winter fishing, long nights, and I love the long nights, but let me tell you, people that hang their rods up till March are missing the trick, because as soon as that shortest day comes, come Christmas, New Year, January, I'm on the upturn. It's all happening.
Yeah.
Days are getting longer. The shoots start coming out on the trees again.
Again, it's reliant on conditions, you know. I mean, last year we didn't have a frost till February, and then we got an awful spring. But it looks like we've had some cold weather early this year. I don't know how that's going to affect the rest of the winter.
One or two people saying we're going to get half winter, but yeah, whatever, bring it on. You know what I mean? It's like I'm fishing like 35-foot deep. I ain't seen no cat ice in the edge or anything. The lake next door's frozen solid, but this one, yeah, I'm interested to see whether this will freeze over.
It's 35 foot deep, 80 acres. I can't see it ever completely freezing, the whole lot of it.
Well, no, as long as you can get a line in and keep it defrosted in the edge, then it's game on.
I have used your technique you do, where you put the unhooking mat. Do you put it on top of the lines at the end of the rod tip?
All I do, people are not going to understand this because it's a bit difficult to explain. What I did do once, I had on another lake, I had a dinghy. I turned it upside down. I set the rods up on the bank so the tips were not hanging over the edge of the swim. They were actually a couple of foot behind towards me, short of the front of the swim, and the lines obviously before it freezes they were going out a few yards before they hit the water. If you get an unhooking mat, because obviously you're not allowed dinghies on a lot of lakes, but that particular lake I was getting away with it, and I adapted that onto Mill Lane. I used an unhooking mat instead, obviously down there strict rules, no boats and all that. But so what I did, I placed the boat or the unhooking mat on top of the line just past the rod tips, and instead of the line going out and hitting the water a few yards in front of you, it now comes straight off the rod tip in front of the boards, straight down into the water underneath your unhooking mat and your boat or whatever you've got at hand, your dinghy. You need something quite substantial, big, like a big unhooking mount or whatever. But it doesn't suit as well if you've got a high step swim. You need a sort of water level quite close to the top of the swim. And yeah, I had a bike doing that down at Burfield, and the whole lake was frozen over solid. Yeah, if you sort of stand well back and you sweep the rod with the rod tip virtually touching the floor, your line, the angle of it going into the hole and out, as long as there's no step down from the top of the swim into the water, the angle of the line, I know it sounds risky, but honestly, I've done it. It's pretty safe, as long as you're not fishing weedy waters or out to any dangerous features or bars. I was, you know, fishing a deep open water, ideally like this one. It was at night, and I put the headlamp torch on, and I see a fish that I was playing under the ice, literally gliding along under the ice, and I netted it in the hole.
Yeah, so for people,
I've done that for many years. It's doable, but I've only done it once.
It's for people that don't know, then obviously the bigger your unhooking mat or a dinghy, if you're allowed to use boats, obviously the lake keeps a big area free from ice, which A, yeah, stops your lines freezing, and B, gives you an area to land the fish, doesn't it?
Well, funny thing is as well, I just literally put it on top of the lines, and then obviously if you get a bite, you have to pull it off, pull it out of the water, and then play it. And funny thing was, I'd done this down at Mill Lane last year with an unhooking mat, and next day, you know, if you haven't had anything, you can get your waders on, jump in the edge if it's, you know, suitable, and you can sort of make a bit of a, you know, a bit of a larger sort of clearing, and then you're fishing, you're out there, you know, birds ain't picking you up. But once you clear that, I found last year that one night, again, it went really cold, and it didn't freeze over, funnily enough, that hole. But it's keeping it floating, it's keeping it ice-free initially as the lake is freezing, that is the hard part.
Interesting. It's pretty hardcore. As you said, most people have probably hung their rods up for the winter. But if you're out there, there's a few little tips just to keep it going. Do you find fishing particles, corn, maggots and stuff in the winter, or do you stick with your bird seedy boilies?
I'm a boily man through and through, mate.
Yeah. We've been speaking a lot about rigs recently. Deciding what the kind of the perfect rig is. We've had Roger Bacon on the show quite a bit recently, and he's heavily into his rigs. Now, I've come to the conclusion that the rig we call the Johnny Mac rig, which is basically the multi-rig, I first saw you using about 14, 15 years ago on Yateley. You were using it then. The bit where you've obviously doubled the end of the coated braid over kind of makes a stiff section at the end, and I've come to the conclusion that having that stiff section is important in all rigs. To stop the hook turning when they try and eject it, obviously stops it turning around. And was that by design? I mean, I know obviously that rig was done so you could keep changing the hooks regular, keeping the super sharp hook. But was it just kind of, I don't know, what's your thoughts on what's important in a rig?
Well, obviously with the multi rig, it's a go anywhere rig. I use it every day I go fishing. I use that rig, whether it's a pop up or a bottom bait. You can use it for both. I tie the baits on, whether it be a bottom bait or a pop up. But I nine times out of ten, I'm with a pop up. I think the efficiency of it, I don't really know. I mean, I'm not a wizard on I'm not too technical. I'm one of them that sort of like pays attention to what's going on, and I get the, oh mate,
another ring.
Just sat down. I just sat down then, and there's more ripples coming in from over there.
No way.
There's no birds out there, mate.
What sort of range are you fishing?
I'm fishing at about 150. Right. 145. Right.
Wow. And there's fish out there.
There's fish out there, mate. Technical side of the multi-rig, I mean, yeah, this section helps, and I always like it supple around the shot. For that to sort of be easily lifted when the carp are sucking, but Yeah, I'm not technical on rigs, mate, so I don't think there is a rig that will do any situation. I fished on Stone Acres a couple of years ago. I was struggling to start with, and I was going out in a boat after I knew I'd had fish on me, and I was looking at the rigs, and they'd moved them. Well, they had me three offerings, and they cleared me out and left the rig or moved the rig, and they were getting away with it with that multi-rig on there, if I'm honest. And Eddie and Dave, they'll know the sort of rig that I used on there, and it was pretty much a reverse combi.
Yeah.
It had a stiff boom, you know, the sort of shodder wire.
Yeah.
Like the... That's what the atomic one is. I don't know what you call it.
It's like fluorocarbon or something. Sort
of,
something stiff.
Filament type sort of stuff that you use for chods anyway.
Yeah.
I had a 3-inch section of that with the hook on the end of there. And then I had a supple braid section from there to the swivel. And I basically sort of trimmed down a sort of bait and made it wafter. Sort of, you know, like wafting. And they couldn't deal with it. I think I had 12 or 13 fish on it when I switched to that, and they couldn't deal with it. So that...
Do you think the most important bit is just doing something that, as you say, that they can't deal with, i.e. just something different to what they're used to, because they get used to rejecting 100%. It a certain way?
100%. I mean, that rig doesn't cast out particularly well, and we were using boats on there, which was fortunate. And it's only because I could use a boat that I could see that they were getting away with it. Otherwise, I'd be sitting there pulling my hair out and then re-chucking out another multi-rig. But I could see they were getting away with it. I changed it. I thought, you know what, I'll do something radical. A little bit totally sort of the opposite to how I normally go. In fact, I did use that rig. That's how I came to use it on Stone Acres. I did use it on Nazi. And someone put me onto that. My mate, Scott, and he was nailing them. On that rig, and he showed it to me, and I took it onto Stone Acres after seeing how they were getting away with it, and the fish, they couldn't deal with it.
And that's basically Roger's go-to rig. He's a reverse combi. He uses quite a long boom section of braid, just normal braid, like something soft.
Yeah.
You know, a good 8-10 inches, and then he uses a stiff section.
I was using about 2 inches to 3 inches, a short piece on the hook, and then another 2 to 3 inches to the swivel. So it's about a 5 to 6 inch hook link on a stiff section by the hook and a supple bit, and they really couldn't deal with it. I think when they picked it up and tried to sort of spit it out and move, they were nailed. I mean, we were obviously using heavy leads dropping from the boat, and that obviously helps. Heavy leads as well is something that a lot of people just overlook. Even on a small lake, everyone uses 2 ounce leads because they're flicking them out. Use a 4 ounce or a 5 ounce lead. I know it makes a bit of a noise going in, but once it's in, it's in. And if the fish pick it up, they can't deal with it. Simple as that.
We've had this exact same conversation over the last few weeks with Frank Warwick, Roger, and Nashi as well, and all come to the same conclusion: is heavy leads. Most people use the smallest lead they need to cast to wherever they're casting to, and it does seem to be, especially more tricky fish, you know, fish that are a bit more riggy, it's very hard for them to shake off a 4 ounce plus lead, you know, especially a 5 ounce. There's just no chance they can shake it off. You prick them, it's game over.
People use 2 ounce, 3 ounce leads, and the fish are so used to picking them up.
Yeah. They can. So do you think you know when you're going out in the boat and either they've done all your freebies and maybe your hook bait's been left or it's been moved. So do you think where it's been moved? I mean, I've heard this before that fish actually moved the rig off the spot. I don't think. I just think they've hooked themselves, shook their head, and got away with it. You know, they've bolted and it's come out.
Yeah.
If you're fishing at range, you've only had a beep or two. They haven't actually picked it up and dropped it off the spot so they can carry on feeding, as I've heard some people say.
No.
They've hooked themselves and got away with it before you knew about it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's also, I mean, a fish could give you a pretty savage liner if it's feeding down there, and it could drag your leg, couldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? That was when I was using a 3 ounce round pair or whatever, and I upped my lead size, changed the rigs, and obviously with a boat you've got so much more advantages with like presenting your line lay correctly, you know. I mean, I knew I was up against some very good anglers, and I hadn't used the boat since I was at Raysbury really properly, and I thought, right, this is my game, I will pay a lot of attention to the line lay. And it was pinching little bits of putty on the line, draping it in the right areas, getting the rigs into sort of the right zones, and, yeah, and sort of making sure there was no line for the fish to swim, like bump into as it entered the clearing sort of thing. And that is a winner, you know. That's a game changer. Line lay.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't care about 110 yards, it's the last 3 or 4 yards.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's that, you know, it's the key bit, and sometimes it doesn't have to be tricky, just simple. But yeah, it's interesting that, you know, by trial and error, you came up with pretty much the exact setup that, you know, we've been talking about for the last few weeks with, you know, a few sort of riggy people, and that's it. Heavy leads, a supple braid, and a stiff hook section. It's pretty, you know, almost everybody's in agreement that's probably the ultimate thing. But yeah, we don't use that every time we cast out, do we? It's like we use them sort of rigs when we have to, as opposed to all the time, which, yeah, I know.
I mean, that one I tie doesn't cast well, that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of the benefits of Roger using them longer. The longer braid bit is he actually gets the hook bait spinning almost like a helicopter before he casts. Yeah. Like, you know, he's holding it behind him, and then when you cast it out, you can see it in the air spinning, so you know it's not tangled.
Yeah. Definitely, right, yeah.
You know that helps, but it's really hard with the shorter you go. Like I say, you probably couldn't, if you've got like 3 inch of braid and 3 inch of your actual hooks. A stiff bit is, that's going to tangle a lot in it on a big cask. It's just up the side of your lead, isn't it, all the way out.
Yeah, man,
well, we've been chatting nearly an hour. Time flies. Halves open, you get
flies, mate. let's have a quick half hour catch up, he says.
Well,
you know what, though, it's always a pleasure, mate, talking to you. I'll tell you, you know that.
I was half hoping you'd get a bite while we're on the phone.
Do you know what? I was just standing there now, and I'm thinking, if I get one, I'm not going to cut off and go, right, hang on, I've got to go. I'm going to say, hang on, just wait there. I'm going to put you on loudspeaker, and I'll put you down by my feet, and I'll commentate you as I'm playing it.
Well, there's only one person that's done that, and that was Adam Penning. He had a bite. Is it the quarry? I think he fishes. Yeah, he had a bite while we were on the phone. But he's the only one in a year and a half of doing these podcasts. Oh, when you're saying there's fish out there, you're saying the lakes are.
What do you mean he's the only one? I'm not having that. Here we go. Hang on. Oi. No, I'm joking.
All right, dude. Well, if you do get a bite later, give us a ring. I'll put the recorder straight on. We'll edit it in. Nobody will know.
Yeah.
All right, dude. Well, I hope you get one this week, and I hope to bump into you soon. And if not, we'll hopefully cross paths at the Northern Angling Show.
All right, so, mate, it's always a pleasure.
Cheers, John. I'll speak soon, pal.
See you soon, mate. Take care. Bye, mate. Bye.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
So that's pretty much it for this week. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Just as an extra from the conversation we just had with John there, if you would like to go to Etang de Bernier, John's Lake over in France, we're looking provisionally at the 11th of March 2017. So if you would like to go with myself, possibly Mark, but definitely John Mack and me, then the price will be £350 for a week's fishing. on the lake. You have to get yourself there. We can all go in a convoy from Calais or whatever. Provisionally the 11th to the 17th, Saturday to Saturday of March. If you are interested, there are 8 places available. Then get in touch with myself or get yourself over to the Carpcast website, www.thecarpcast.com, and we should be able to, should have something in the shop there. But if you express an interest, if it's something that might interest you, then give me a shout. And that's it. We'll catch you next time.
Check out the website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.